thank you very much, everybody, for coming to this year. We have a tremendous host to hear from Rav Schechter today on Parshas Korach. And I just wanted to thank all the sponsors and the volunteers. The sponsors are Yeshiva University Office of the Vice President for University Life, as well as a number of individuals, including Avraham Mazad and Alan Millman. Thank you very much, Professor.
In the beginning of Parshas Korach, there's a rebellion against the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu, as well as against the institution of Kohuna, why Aharon was chosen. So that's why in the end of Parshas Korach, the second half of the Parsha, the Torah reviews all of the matnas Kohuna, all of the gifts that are given to the Kohanim, because there was an error, there was a question as to whether they're still entitled to it. So the Chumash repeats again all of these matnas Kohuna. So the most famous of the 24 matnas Kohuna, the Gemara always says that there are chof dala, 24 matnas Kohuna, gifts that are given to the Kohanim. There are really more than 24, so the Rishonim have different suggestions as to which ones you combine together to come to the number of 24. It's not that relevant. So the most famous of all of the matnas Kohuna is the truma, that anything that grows in Eretz Yisrael, whether fruits or vegetables or grain, you have to take out truma first. You're supposed to be bringing a loudspeaker. So I'll try to scream a little louder. The first of the 24 matnas Kohuna that's mentioned here, the most famous is truma. Anything that grows in Eretz Yisrael may not be eaten, it's tevel, until you take out truma gedoyla, maaser rishon, and maaser sheni. So the Torah says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I have given heineno sati lechosh mishmeres truma osai. I have given the truma to the Kohanim. Why is it called Mishmeres Truma Osai? So the Talmud understands that you have to be careful. Lishameres HaTruma means to protect the truma, to see to it, number one, that it doesn't get ruined, and number two, that it doesn't become tomei. Rashi on the first daf in Chulin, that based on the base, points out that the same din of Mishmeres applies to Karbanos as well with a Kavachemer. If you have to be careful that the truma should not become tummy, should not get ruined, you certainly have to be careful that the korbanos don't become ruined and don't become tummy. If they'll become tummy, they'll be ruined. So that's the equivalent of causing them to become truma that becomes tummy is useless. It may not be eaten. And korbanos that become tummy are useless as well. So that's a violation of Mishmeres Truma sign. There is a famous comment made by the Pnei Yeshua in his Chidushim on Pesachim, where he writes that he thinks that with respect to Maaser Sheni also has Kedusha, has to be eaten in Yerushalayim, similar to Kachim Kalim, and the Maaser Sheni has to be eaten in a state of Kedusha V'Tahara. So the Pnei Yeshua writes, he thinks that with respect to Maaser Sheni, the din of Mishmeres would only apply if you would be careless and you wouldn't protect the Maaser Sheni from getting ruined. But if you're careless and it becomes Tameh, or even if you're Metameh Biyadayim, he doesn't think that that would be a problem on Mishmeres, because the din is that if Maaser Sheni becomes Tameh, it can always be Toided. And then you take the money and you buy new food, and you eat that food with Kedusha V'Tahara. So he thinks that allowing Maaser Sheni to become Tameh, or even if being Metameh, Maaser Sheni would not pose a problem. The later commentaries ask that this seems to contradict an explicit Gemara in Sukkah, or Mishnah in Sukkah. We're almost there. Thank you very much. Okay, a little better now. Okay. We usually assume, not like this Pnei Yeshua, we assume that even with respect to Maaser Sheni, even though if the Maaser Sheni would become Tamei, the din is that you can be poted a Maaser Sheni, and then you can use the money to buy some other food instead and eat that food, B'kdusha V'Tahara, but still allowing the Maaser Sheni to become Tamei would constitute a violation of Mishmeres. The Pasuk says that the purpose of this truma being given to the Kohen is that the Kohanim should eat it. L'chona satim l'moshka ulevanecha l'chok olam. L'moshka means, Rashi says, l'gdula. Rashi quotes from the Tanaim and from the Gemara. This is in Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Ches, that the truma should be eaten by the Kohanim l'moshka in a very bekabedika fashion. Kederach shahamalochim ochlim, the same way kings would eat a meal. Truma shouldn't be eaten like a chapanash. You're just standing and you eat it and you run. It's not supposed to be like a fast food. You're supposed to sit down and eat it in a relaxed position. There is a problem that was raised by the Balei HaTosfos that the korbanos are divided into two categories. You have kachim kalim and you have kachi kachim. The kachi kachim, the more holy korbanos, the chatos and the oshim and so on, have to be eaten only in the Azorah. Cannot be eaten in the rest of Yerushalayim. The kachim kalim may be eaten in all of Yerushalayim. But the kachi kadoshim, the chatos and the oshim, have to be eaten by zichrei kuhuna only in the Azorah. So we have another rule that ain yeshiva ba'azara. No one's allowed to sit in the Azara unless you happen to be the melech from the Malchus Beis David. But the Kohanim are not from the Malchus Beis David. So you mean that the Kohanim have to eat the Chatas and the Yoshim standing? How is that l'moshka l'gedula? How is that a b'kovedika way to eat the Chatas and the Yoshim? So the Mishlam Melech quotes that there are Rishonim, Balei HaTosfos, who talk about this. We don't have it in our Tosfos on the Gemara. He quotes it from other Rishonim quote this. The Shita Mekubetzus on the side of the Gemara quotes this problem in the name of the Balei HaTosfos. How can the Kohanim eat the Chatos and the Yoshim in the Azor in a standing position? How is that a fulfillment of the Moshcha Kedar Shambach Mochum? Kings sit and eat in a relaxed position. They eat the Haseba to show that they're knackers, big mention. So the Mishnah Melech quotes an opinion from the Balei HaTosfos that even though generally it's forbidden to sit in the Azorah, but for the Kohanim, for the purpose of eating the Chatos and the Yoshim, we would permit them to sit. This is one of two opinions in Tosfos. One opinion is, we would allow them to sit. That sitting is considered more of the Kavadik. This opinion of sitting as a fulfillment of the Moshcha L'Gedula, Gederach HaMlochim, some have such a minhag, it's not really a din, but some have such a minhag, when you perform a Pidyon HaBen, so the money should be given to the Kohen in a fashion of the Moshcha L'Gedula. So some Rishonim have such a practice, it's recorded, and some have the minhag today, that the father of the baby who is giving the money should stand, and the kohen should be sitting on a chair, rather than have them both stand, have them both sit. So dafka, the father should stand, and the kohen should sit, like one who is appearing in front of a king, and he's giving lemoshcha, kederach hamalachim. Also, based on the principle of lemoshcha, the truma should only be eaten if the kohen is hungry. Let's say the kohen is already stuffed. He came home from a wedding, and he ate five times as much as he should have normally eaten for dinner. And then he has this truma left over, and he doesn't know what to do with it. He has some truma in the house, so he's going to stuff himself in order to get rid of the truma, because it's sitting around the house, and it's going to get ruined. So he's going to stuff himself. So the Gemara says that achila gasa by truma is not the way to fulfill the mitzvah of eating truma. That's not the fulfillment of Lamashka L'Gdula Kedar Sham Lachem Ochlam. In fact, there is a question regarding this principle of Achila Gasa. The Gemara says that one who eats Achila Gasa on Yom Kippur is not Chayv Koreis, because the Pasuk never says on Yom Kippur that you're not allowed to eat. It says Ta'anu Es Nafshe Seichen. So if a person eats Achila Gasa, that's not a violation of Inui. When a person is hungry and he eats food, that's a violation of the Inui. When a person eats Achila Gasa, that's not a violation of Inui. So the truth of the matter, the Gemara only has this principle of Achila Gasa in two places. The Gemara says, one who eats Achila Gasa on Yom Kippur is not Chayv Koreis. And a non-Kohen who eats Truma, Achila Gasa, is not Chayv Misa B'dei Shamayim. These are the only two times the Gemara has that Achila Gasa is not considered Achila. There's a third Gemara which seems to contradict these two Gemara. The Gemara talks about one eating Korban Pesach, Achila Gasa. The person stuffed himself all day on Erev Pesach. The din is that you're not supposed to eat a meal. You can have a snack on Erev Pesach, but you're not supposed to eat a meal on Erev Pesach in order to eat the Korban Pesach, Litei Avon. So what happens if a person stuffed himself on Erev Pesach? Then on Leil Pesach he eats the Korban Pesach as an Achila Gasa. So the Gemara first says he's not Yotze the Mitzvah. The Gemara says two people eating the same Korban Pesach, everything looks exactly the same. One of them didn't eat on Erev Pesach, so he eats the Korban Pesach Letei Avon. The other one stuffed himself on Erev Pesach, he eats the Korban Pesach Achila Gasa. So the Gemara says the first one is Yotze the Mitzvah, the second one is not Yotze the Mitzvah, even though to the onlooker it looks exactly the same. We don't know who stuffed himself and who was hungry. So the pasuk says in Navi, Ki Yisharim Da'achei Hashem Tzadikim Yelchuvam Ufoshim Yikash Luvam. The Dachi Hashem Ayushorim, two people going on the same derech. So the tzaddik is yotzei the mitzvah, or rishoyim ufoshim yikosh levom, and the posher, the one who stuffed himself on Erev Pesach, is not yotzei the mitzvah. That's how the Gemara says. Then the Gemara says that it cannot be that that's the pshat, just because he ate the Korban Pesach achila gasa, he says he's not yotzei. Why should that be so? Gemara says no, he's not yotzei mitzvah min amufchor. It's more proper to eat the Korban Pesach l'tei avon. So Tosis raises the issue, but the other two Gemara said with respect to a non-koyin eating truma, that there's a punishment on misa b'day shamayim, that it doesn't apply if one eats it achila gasa, and the one who eats on yom kippah achila gasa, he's stuffed and he's just stuffing himself some more. So the Gemara there says with respect to those two dinim, achila gasa doesn't count, it's not called achila. So how come the Gemara's final conclusion is with respect to the Korban Pesach, that even one who eats an achila gasa is yotzei the mitzvah b'dieved, but it's just not yotzei a mitzvah min amufchor, he doesn't have the hida mitzvah of eating it with tayoven. So Tosfos says you have to say there are two types of achila gasa. One is when the person is so stuffed that it's nauseating to eat some more, so then achila gasa is not called achila at all with respect to any mitzvah. And if that were the case, he wouldn't even be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. But there's another kind of achila gasa, the person isn't that hungry. If you give him some food, he'll eat it, but it's not he's not ready to throw up from eating the food. It's just that he didn't eat it to the teyavon, so then that kind of achila gasa is called achila. It's just that it's not a mitzvah min amufcha. That's Tosfos' suggestion. Karen Oira wrote a sefer on the Gemara. He lived in the mid-1800s. He was the younger brother of the Mishkanes Yankiv. So the Karen Oira writes, and after his brother passed away, the Mishkanes Yankiv was the Raven Karlin. Rabbi Yankel Karlinus, after he passed away, so they took the Keren Ora as the Rav in the city. So the Keren Ora points out that if you look in the Rambam only quotes the din of Achila Gasa in the two places that the Gemara quoted it. One is with respect to the non-kain eating the Truma Achila Gasa, and one is with respect to eating on Yom Kippur Achila Gasa. The Rambam never generalized the rule the way Tosfos did. Tosfos writes that Achila Gasa, if the person eats after he's stuffed, is not considered Achila with respect to any of the mitzvahs of the Torah. So the Rambam only quotes it in two cases that the Gemara writes it, and the Rambam never generalizes it. So the Karen Ora suggests maybe the Rambam understood the Gemara that Achila Gasa is only Lavshma Achila with respect to these two dinim. Why? So he says on Yom Kippur, the Gemara says why? Because it never says that you're not allowed to eat. It says on Nefesh Shalosu Una V'Nichrusu. So it's only a violation of Inu if the person was hungry and he eats food to break his hunger. But if he's stuffed and then he eats additional food, so that's not a violation of Inu. That's a local svara with respect to eating on Yom Kippur. With respect to a non-kohen eating truma, so also the Karen Ora suggests that's a local din, a special din only with respect to truma, because the prohibition of a non-kohen eating truma is because he's mevatel a mitzvah. The mitzvah should have been that a kohen should have eaten the truma. So if a non-kohen eats the truma, he's mevatel a mitzvah. For that, he deserves misa b'day shamayim. Zar she'ochal truma is misa b'day shamayim. So that's only the fulfillment of the kohen eating truma, is only if the kohen eats it, l'mashcha l'gdula k'dav sham loch mochum. That's what the pasuk says. If the kohen is going to eat the truma achila gasa, he won't be in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So if a non-kohen eats truma, and the non-kohen is eating achila gasa, you can't really call it a bitul mitzvah. So if the kohen would have eaten it like that, he would not have been mekayim the mitzvah. So that doesn't constitute a bitul mitzvah. But in Kol HaTorah Kula, the Rambam apparently thinks that achila gasa is shma achila. All of these are based on the pasuk lemoshkol that the truma and all of the matnas kuna should be given to the kohanim in a fashion, in a bekavadika fashion. You should give the pidyon aben to the kohen in a bekavadika fashion, and the kohen should eat the truma and the korbanos in a bekavadika fashion. Then the pasuk continues pasuk tes. The chumash is listing off many of the 24 matnas kuna here. It doesn't list off all of them, but many of them are mentioned and others are alluded to. In Pasuk Tes in Perek Yud Ches, the Chumash continues to say that the Kohanim are entitled to get the Besar HaChatos and the Besar HaOsham, and because it's Kodesh Kodoshim, it has to be eaten in the Azorah by the Zichrei Kohuna. So the Pasuk has an interesting expression. Zeh Yelecho, the Kodesh HaKodoshim, the following is, there are matanos that are given to the Kohanim from the Kodeshim Kalim also. If you bring a Korban Shlomim to the Beis HaMikdash, you have to take out the Chaz of the Shok can give it to the Kohanim. That can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim, like the rest of the Bistar HaShlomim can be eaten by the Bailim in Yerushalayim. So the Chaz of the Shok can be eaten by the Kohanim in Yerushalayim. Chaz of Ashok, it says in Ezra Mekoyman, those who davened this morning, so he said Ezra Mekoyman, so it says in Ezra Mekoyman that the Chaz of Ashok can be eaten by Eishes Koyin. The Chatos and the Yoshim cannot be eaten by the wife of the Koyin, can only be eaten by Zichri Kuna, by the male. It can only be eaten in the Azorah, because the eating of the Chatos and the Yoshim is considered like an Avodah, considered as if you are Makrib the Korban. Just like the Kabbalah Saddam and the Halacha Saddam and the Zrika Saddam and the Haktoras HaEvorim, all of the Avodas have to be done by male Kohan and by Zichri Kuna. So too, the Gemara says that with respect to Chatos and Oshim, Kohanim Ochlim, Ubailim is Kaprim. When the Kohanim eat the Bisar HaChatos and the Bisar HaOshim, that constitutes part of the Kapar. That's like Haktoras HaEmurim. Part of the flesh, the fatty parts of the flesh you burn on the Mizbech, the Chelev, and other parts have to be eaten by the Kohanim. The Achilas HaKohanim is considered as if it had been Korev al Gabni HaMizbech. So that's the expression that the Chumash uses. How did the Chachamim know this idea, Kohanim Oichlim, Ubailim is Kaprim? That by the Kohanim eating the Chatos and the Oshim, the Bailim get a Kapara, just like the Haktorah Seymurim, just like when you burn the fatty part on the Mizbech, because the Pasuk in Pasuk Tet says, in Yudches Pasuk Tet, Zei Yelucham HaKodesh HaKadosh Min HaEish, from the Chatos and the Yoshim he gives to the Kohanim to eat, to the Zichri Kuna to eat in the Azara, and it should be considered Min HaEish, just like the fatty parts, the Chelev is burnt on the Yesh. So these parts are eaten by the Kohanim, and that's considered as if it had been Korib al-Gabi HaMizbech. So that constitutes part of the Kapora, part of the Avoida. So the Gemara derives from this Pasuk a principle that Karbanos are Mamon Gavoya. The Tanoim had a big machlok. It's interesting, after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, we have big discussions among the Tanoim regarding the dinim of Karbanos. We don't have too much from the days of the Bayi Sheni. We have much more literature in the Tanoim from the Tanoim who lived after the Churban HaBayis about Karbanos than we do from the Tanoim who lived Bizman HaBayis. Hillel and Shammai lived Bizman HaBayis. A lot of Tanoim, half of the Tanoim lived Bizman HaBayis. But the big discussions of Karbanos appear among all of those Tanaim who lived after the Churban HaBayis. So the Gemara has in the end of the second Perek in Kedushin, the Gemara has an interesting debate among the Tanaim, many different opinions, a whole variety of different opinions. A Kohen gets a piece of flesh from a Chatos or an Oshim, which he's supposed to eat in the Azorah, the Gzusha V'Tahara, and instead of eating it in the Azorah, he sees his girlfriend and he gives her the piece of flesh and he says, Harei Mufudesh Esli Bazeh. So you don't have to give Dafke a ring. We have a minhag to give a ring based on a Zohar. You don't have to give a ring. You can give kesef, kiddusha kesef. You can give any shava kesef. So he gives the girl a piece of flesh. Yeah, the girl is not allowed to eat the flesh, even after she marries him. She's not, because the Bisar Chatos and Oshim is only eaten by Zichri Kuhuna. So the girl is not going to eat the flesh, but it's still worth money. She can give it to some other kohen to eat. She can give it back to her husband to eat. It is shava kesef. So the Tanoim after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash have this big Machloikis HaTanoim, whether she is Mekudeshes or not. So some Tanoim are of the opinion, why not? The piece of flesh was given to the Kohen, it belongs to him. If he would have Truman, he would give it to the girl and say, Hariat Mekudeshes Li, I'm Kaddish B'Truman is Mekudeshes, so why should I say if he's Mekaddish B'Bisar Chatas or B'Bisar Roshim, it should be any different? Let's say a Kohen gets Pidyon HaBen money, then he takes the money, gives it to his girlfriend, and he says, Hariat Mekudeshes Li, why shouldn't it be good? A Kohen gets Reishis Hagez, he gets wool, and he takes the wool and he gives it to a girl. He says, Hariat Mekudeshes, so why not? It's all his. If he takes Bikurim and he gives it to a girl, says, Hariat Mekudeshes, also good, why not? So why shouldn't Trum, why shouldn't Kachi Kachim be good? So one opinion of Tanoim is that it is good. The accepted opinion is that it's not Mekudeshes because the Karbanos are considered Mama Gavoya. Doesn't belong to the Kohen. He only has the right to eat it, and his eating it is for the purpose of kapara. The Bala Korban gains kapara, but it doesn't really belong to the Kohen. So the Gemara establishes this principle based on this phrase in the Pasuk, Zei Yelachom Mekodesh HaKadoshim Min HaEish, just like the Chelev is Korev on the Mizbeach, so the Chelev that the Kohanim eat, the Besar HaChatos HaOshim, that the Kohanim eat, is Kohanim Oichlim Abaylam is Kaprim. It just accomplishes kapara for the Bala Korban. It's not considered Mamana Kohanim at all. And then within that, that's the position that is accepted, that the Karbanos are considered Mamana Gavoya, not considered Mamana Bailam, doesn't belong to the Kohen. the Truma or the Bikurim or the Pigyanat Ben Mani or the Reishis Hagez and most of the 24 Matnas Kuna do belong to the Kohen. But the Besar HaChatzos LaHashem does not belong to the Kohen. So then the Gemara has, different Tanoim have compromised opinions. Some Karbanos, yes, some Karbanos, no. Before Shechita, after Shechita, all kinds of Shlomim is different from Bechor HaMaisa, all kinds of different opinions. To what extent do I apply this pasuk? But the basic principle is the accepted, this is the accepted position, that the Karbanos are considered Mamon Gavoya as opposed to Mamon Bayim. The Psukim draw a distinction between the Kochi Kochim as opposed to the Truma, as opposed to the Chaz of the Shoik, that the Chaz of the Shoik of the Shlomim or the Truma may be eaten not only by the Kohen, may be eaten by Mrs. Kohen, even though Mrs. Kohen was not born a Kohenet. She was born a Leviya or Israelis, but once she marries a Kohen, so we declare Ishta Kegufo, so she's considered, as long as she's married to the Kohen, she's considered as if she also is a Kohenet. So we would permit her to eat the Truma, and we would allow her to eat the Chaz of the Shoik. That's what it says in the Mishnah. The Ish is kind is permitted to eat the Chaz of the Shoik of Shlomim as well. The Kochi Kochim can only be eaten by the Zichrei Kohen in the Azora, because even if Kohenes was born a Kohenes, cannot be Makriv Karbonus, and the eating of the Chatus and the Asham is considered as if it were an Avodah. Even though it's eating, Kohen is eating and is not burning anything on the Mizbeach, Kohanim Oichel Mebalim Miskapim is considered as if an Avodah was done, and the Avodah has to be done by the Zichrei Kohen. The Pasuk where we learn out this institute, this halacha, that Eishes Kohen is permitted to eat the Truma and is permitted to eat the Chaz of the Shoik, is in Pasuk Yud Aleph, called Tohar Beveischa Yochal Oso, and the word Beso often has the connotation of Beso Zuishto. Rashi quotes this from the Tanoim, Beso Zuishto. The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur has to be married. The first Mishnah in Yuma says Kohen Gadol has to be married all year long. There's no din that a Kohen Gadol has to be married. But in order to do the Hakrabas HaKarbon, a special Karbonas on Yom Kippur, to acquire an atonement for the Klal Yisrael, the Mishnah says the Kohen Gadol has to be married to one wife and not to two wives. The Rambam says that all year long the Kohen Gadol can only be married to one wife. The Rabbi says, how does he know that all year long he can only have one wife? On Yom Kippur it says he only has to have one wife. So the Mishnah, in the first Mishnah in Yuma, says the Kohen Gadol has to be married on Yom Kippur to one wife. And this is based on the Pasuk, V'chipe ba'ado u'biyad beso. When the Kohen Gadol gets an atonement, so first he gets a kapara for himself, then he gets a kapara, he says vidui three times on Yom Kippur. So the first time he says vidui to gain a kapara for his own averus. Second time he says vidui to get a kapara for all of the Kohanim, the Shevet Kohanim. The third time he says vidui, it's recited as a vidui for all of Klal Yisrael. So the first time that he says the vidui, his wife is included. Chiba bado biad beso, beso zuishta, his wife is included. So that's how the Tanaim knew that the Kohen Gadol has to be married on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says there in the first Perek in Yuma, there are two levels of marriage, there's Erisin and there's Nisuin. When you give a ring to the girl, she's only an Arusa. That's Kiddushin, the Kodesha. When you stand under, after giving the ring, then we waste a little time, the rabbi reads the Ksuba, whatever. Chazan sings, the rabbi gives a drasha. And then when you stand under the chuppah and you recite the Sheva Brachas, that constitutes the Nisuin. And the Ish is completed, she's considered an Eishes Ish Bebeis HaBaal. During Erisin, she's considered an Eishes Ish. And after Nisuin, she's considered an Eishes Ish B'Beis HaBaal, and many dinim change. Many dinim change on the level of their Eish as well as on the level of their Rabbanim. So one of the dinim that changes is this halacha that Kohen Gadol has to be married in order to do the Avodah on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says explicitly that Beis HaZuishto only applies to Ishto Nisua. If it's Ishto Arusa, if the Kohen Gadol only has Erisin with the girl, then he's not kosher to do the Avodah on Yom Kippur. You have to have a Kohen Gadol who's married with Nisuin to the wife. So the same is true over here. This pasuk that says that an Eishes Kohen is permitted to eat Truma and permitted to eat Chaz of the Shoik of the Shlomim, the pasuk that says that is Koltor Beveischa Yochaloso. Koltor Beveischa is only Ishto Nisua. So the Gemara raises the question, what's the din of Ishto Arusa? What if a Kohen is married to a girl who herself is not a Kohenet? And all he has is Erisin. In the days of the Tanoim, in the days of the Talmud, till the days of the Gaonim, used to be a long wait. a long waiting period in between the Aries and the Nisuin. They used to wait a whole year. The girl would have Kiddushin now, she would be married to the husband, and then they wouldn't be Nichnas L'chuppah until 12 months later. That's where the expression comes from, Rat Ayor and Amitzvah, they wait a year and a Wednesday, because the Mishnah says that after Erisin, the chasen, the girl says, I want to have already the Nisuin. The husband is not obligated to support his wife till after Nisuin. So the wife says, I want you to start supporting me. He says, no, he's going to do the Nisuin later, 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 later. So how long can he postpone? 10 years, 20, how long? The Mishnah says they can only postpone a year, 12 months. And then the first Wednesday, they have to shtel achupah. That's the source of the Yiddish expression, wait a whole year, and then another Wednesday following that year. So in the days of the Tanakh, and the days of the Tanoim, and the days of the Amoraim, to the days of the Gaonim, there was a long wait in between Erisin and Nisuin. The days of the Gaonim, they realized that it's bringing Kilkulim, so they instituted the practice that we have today, that you have the Nisuin immediately following the Erisin with a slight pause in between, just a 5-minute break in between the Erisin and the Nisuin. But in the days of the Talmud, when they had a long break in between, so what's the din is an Eishes Kohen, the Kohen is married to a wife who herself is not a Kohenis, and he only had Erisin, he didn't have Nisuin, so she's not yet considered Kol Torah Beveischa. Beis Uishta is only if she's a Nisua, that's what it says in the Gemara in Yuma. Kangol on Yom Kippur has to have Nisuin in order to be considered the Chippa Ba'adah B'yad Beisha. So if the Kohen is only married to the girl with Erisin during that year, is she permitted to eat Truma or not? So the Gemara has long discussions of this. The Gemara says, Min HaTorah biblically, she is permitted to eat Truma. And it's only forbidden mid the Rabbanon for various reasons. The Gemara has long discussions about the two reasons. One Tana holds from reason A, one Tana holds from reason B, maybe a hold from both reasons. Long discussions, what's the difference between the two reasons? What is that then based on? How do you know that an Eishes Kohen who's only an Arusa is permitted to eat Truma? It can't be based on this pasuk. Kol Torah Beveischa Yochal Osa is only based on Zuishto if she's in Isua. So the Gemara says, no, that's based on a different pasuk. In Chumash Vayikra, it says in Parsha Semor, Kohen ki ikne nefesh kinyan kaspo. So the Arusa is also considered kinyan kaspo. So it's interesting, you have two psukim to teach you that the Kohen's wife, Mrs. Kohen, is permitted to eat Truma, permitted to eat Chaz of a Shoik, even though she herself is not a Kohenis. The one pasuk seems to be more inclusive than the other. This pasuk, Kol Torah Beveischa, only refers to an Isua. And the other pasuk, Kohen Ki Ikne Nefesh Kinyan Kaspo, is much more inclusive. Even applies to an Arusa. So why do you need this pasuk? If the other pasuk even includes Arusa, why do you need the pasuk, Kol Torah Beveischa Yochal Oisai? So the Yosef Meach points out, he has a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi that doesn't read straight. He thinks that it's a misprint, and he thinks that the correct reading should run as follows, that with respect to the Kohen giving his wife Chaz of the Shoik of the Shlamim, the din requires she has to be an Estua min HaTorah. Because the Pasuk, Kol Torah Beveischa Yochal Oso, is both referring to Truma as well as Chaz of the Shoik of Shlamim. The other Pasuk, Kohen Ki Ikne Nefesh Kinyan Kaspo, that permits the Eishes Kohen to eat Truma even if she's only an Arusa, that pasuk is only talking about Truma. That pasuk is not talking about the Chaz of the Shoik of Shlamim. So the only source that you would have to allow Mrs. Kohen to eat Chaz of the Shoik of Shlamim is the pasuk in today's Sedra, Kol Torah Beveischa Yochal Oisai. So that's only in the Suah. So that's what the Osamech thinks, that that's what it should say in Yerushalmi, that Min HaTorah, the Eishes Kohen who only has Erisin, doesn't yet have Nisuin, is not allowed to eat Chaz of the Shoik Min HaTorah. He's not allowed to eat Truma, that's only with the Rabbanah, but that she's not permitted to eat Chaz of a Shoik, that he thinks is a din d'araisa. Anyway, that's what it says in the Gemara. There are two psukim. The pasuk in today's Sedra, Kol Torah Beveischa Yochal Oso, refers to Nesua, and the pasuk in Parsha Samor, Kohen Ki Ikne Nefesh Kinyan Kaspo, permitting a wife of a Kohen to eat Truma, is only referring to Truma, but it even includes an Arusa. The psukim are running one after the other. To list off is quite a few of the 24, the Chof Talad Matnas Kunis. So the next pasuk is talking again about Truma. So the Truma is referred to as Kol Chelav Yitzol V'Kol Chelav Tirosh V'Dagon. Reishi Soma She'etim L'Hashem L'Chor Nesatim. The Truma is given to the Kohen. And L'Chor Nesatim means it fully belongs to the Kohen. It can even be Mekadosh and Isha with it. Truma is considered Mama Bailam, it's not considered Mama Gavoyah. The Karbonas are Min Ho'esh. The Karbonas are Mama Gavoyah. That's in Pasuk Tes. But the Truma is L'chon Esatim in Pasuk Yud Beis. Why does it say separately, Kol Chelav Yitzar v'Kol Chelav Tirash v'Dogon, separate Chelav Yitzar and separate Tirash v'Dogon? So the Gemara understands from this that when you mafish Truma, you cannot be mafish min al she'ena minoy. If you have potatoes and tomatoes, oranges and apples, you can't figure out how much is 2% of everything and take that value from the oranges and give Truma on everything. You have to take truma from the oranges on the oranges, truma from the potatoes on the potatoes, truma from the apples on the apples, and truma from the tomatoes on the tomatoes. That's why it says separately, kol chelav yitzar v'kol chelav tirosh. Each one is separate. What do these words mean? Yitzar and tirosh and dogon. So dogon, we know, refers to the chameshes mini dogon. The wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. The five minim that are considered lechem, that can make lechem from. You say bar minim zonis, you say hamoit is chiyav chalo. Yesterday's parsha, the chiyav challah and the chilos matzah and so on, that's dogon. What is yitzar and what is tirosh? So tirosh is wine, and yitzar is shemen zayis. So the accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch is, there are more pasuk in Shulchan Aruch, that the obligation to be mafresh truma and whatever grows in Eretz Yisrael only applies min ha-Torah to these three, dogon, tirosh, and yitzar, only to the dogon, to the chameshes mini dogon, to grapes and to wine and to olives and to olive oil. And the hafrashas, trumas and maizes, on potatoes and tomatoes and oranges and apples, but I said before, there are more passages that's all midirabbana. The obligation to be mafish truma menatera is only on these three, dogon, tirish, v'yitzah. The Ramban HaChumash even limits it further. The Ramban on this pasuk even limits it further. He says, menatera, if you're eating grapes, or if you're eating olives, there's no obligation to be mafish trumas and maizes. Only on yitzar, on olive oil, or on tirosh, on wine. But kozman, that you're eating it in the original state that it grew from the ground, there's no obligation to be mafresh trumas and maizes. That's not the accepted opinion. The Rambam disagrees with the accepted opinion in the other direction. He thinks that there are more things that are chayv in trumas and maizes. So the Rambam understands that not only is the grape juice chayv in trumas and maizes, even the grapes are chayv. Normal. Not only the olive oil, the olives also. So then the Rambam goes one step further. You're going to say that only grapes and olives are chayv and shumas and maizes, and what about oranges and apples and all the other fruits that grow on a tree? Once you have that, once you assume that grapes and olives are chayv and shumas and maizes, why should you distinguish between these two and others? Unless you say that grapes and olives are from the shivas aminim. Okay, so then it should come out that dates and figs and pomegranates are also chayv and shumas and maizes minatoros. So there is such an opinion. The Chumash seems to say, if the Torah tells us that olive oil and wine are chayv and shumas and maizes, so the simple pshat is that even grapes and olives are also chayv and shumas and maizes min ha-Torah. And why should I distinguish between grapes and olives and other fruits? So the answer is because the grapes and the olives are from the shivas aminim. So all of the other fruits that are from the shivas aminim are also chayv and shumas and maizes min ha-Torah. That's not the accepted opinion. So the Rambam doesn't hold from that distinction. The Rambam says, you see that all the fruits are chayv and shumas and maizes min ha-Torah. I think Gemara says that Maisa Yerek is only midirabbana. Yeah, that's Yerek, that's vegetables. Afrosh is Trumas and Maisa on all vegetables is only midirabbana. But the Rambam's opinion is that Afrosh is Trumas and Maisa on all fruits is minatar. The halacha distinguishes between fruits and vegetables. We know there's a distinction between fruits and vegetables. If you say Bar Pihait on this and say Bar Pihadam on that, that's midirabbana. We know there are other differences between fruits and vegetables. That fruits have a din of orla, vegetables don't have a din of orla. Yeah, because vegetables you have to plant every year. If you say there's a din of orla, so you never get to eat it. The fruit tree lasts for a long period of time. So the first few years you're not allowed to eat it, and then the din of orla is up. But where do you find any other halachas where we distinguish between fruits and vegetables? So the Rambam says here is the din, that the obligation to be mafish, trumas and maizes, min ha-Torah applies to grapes and to olives, and it applies to all fruits as well. Vegetables is only midirabbanan, maisa yerek is only midirabbanan, and maisa trumas and maisa san fruits is min ha-Torah. Either there's a Gemara that says in Rosh Hashanah that maisa haruvin is only midirabbanan, haruvin is baksa. That when you mafish trumas and maisa san baksa, that's only midirabbanan. So baksa grows on a tree, that's a fruit. So it does not show that all fruits other than grapes and olives are only midirabbanan. So the Rambam says, no, who eats baksa? Behemoth eat baksa. What, normal people eat baksa? Baksa says, Michael Behema. So that's why Minatara baksa is not chayv and shumas maizes, only midirabbanan. But real, normal fruits that are eaten by normal human beings, That's Chayv and Shumas and Maisis Menachah. And the Raiva disagrees with the Rambam. He says, what do you mean, boxer is Michael Behane? Boxer is Michael Adam. By the time it reaches America, it's hard like a rock. So it tastes awful. But to us, it seems to be Michael Behane. But normal boxer is Michael Adam. The Gemara says that Rav Shimon by Ichoi was hiding in a cave for so many years with his son. So there was a boxer. What did he get? He was hiding from the Romans. They were out to kill him. So there was a boxer tree in front of the cave where he was hiding. So every day he would eat the boxer. Okay, the person hiding from the Nazis eat grass also. But the Rabbi says that we assume that boxer is Michalon. So this is a big machalik. We pass from Laloch and Shulchan Aruch that only dog and kirish we eat, so is their rice. Afrosh, Trumas, and Maisis, and all other fruits is only Medirabbanon. And because of that, there are certain leniencies, there are certain kulas. Why did the Chumash refer to the Chuma as Kol Chelev? Yitzel v'chol Chelev Tirash. Chelev means the Mubchor, the choice. So the Tanoim understood from this that if you have a whole bushel full of oranges and you have to be Mafish Chuma, so you shouldn't pick the poorest quality and designate that as the Chuma. Let's say today you're going to burn the Chuma anyway. You may as well pick the apple that's half spoiled, if it's so spoiled that it's not Roy Lachilos Adam, so it doesn't have an Issa Tevel on it. So that you can't be Koreshem Chuma. But let's say you take an apple that's beginning to spoil already, so you're not allowed to do that. The Pasuk refers to the Chuma as Chelev. Chelev means the Mufchor, it doesn't mean the fatty parts. It's fruits and vegetables here. It means the choice. So the din requires that one should be Mafrish Chuma Minha Mufchor. If one is Mafrish Chuma from the weaker quality, from the poor minha garua, so one is in violation of this mitzvah. And the concluding pasuk in the parsha alludes to this again. The last pasuk in Perek Yudches pasuk Lamed Beis says, "Well, asisu alav chait, you will not be in violation of an avera baharim chemes chalvam emenu if you will be mafresh minha muvchor minha yofe. But if you'll be mafresh minha ro ala yofe, then you will be noisechet. Then you will be considered as having violated an aver." So the Gemara says that one is Torah min aro ala yofe is over on this mitzvah. The Ramban, in fact, considers this a separate mitzvah in the minyan mitzvahs. You know, there is a dispute between the Rambam and the Ramban how to calculate which are the 613 mitzvahs. So the Ramban counts this as a separate mitzvah to be mafresh truma min hayofe. The psukim continue with the rest of the Matan's Kuna, the 24 Matan's Kuna. The Pasuk Yud Gimel mentions Bikurim. The farmer is first mafrish Bikurim and everything is still attached to the ground. And then after he detaches everything, then he has to take off Truma Gedoyla, then he has to take off Maisa Rishon, then you take off Maisa Sheni, unless it's the third year or the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle. This year is the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, next year is the Shemitah. So during the third or the sixth years, you give Maisa Oni. In the Shemitah year, everything is Hefker, so you don't give any Matanis at all. You don't have to give any Trumas and Maisa. So the Bikurim is given to the Kohen, just as Truma is given to the Kohen, and it has exactly the same din. The Pasuk says later on, when you designate Maisa Rishon, when you take off 10% of everything, you give it to the Levi. So the Levi is not allowed to eat the Maisa Rishon until he takes out Maisa Minamaisa. He has to take out 10%. Of the 10% that you gave him. In other words, you have to take out 1% of everything that grew and give that to the Kohen. That's called Shumas Maisa, otherwise known as Maisa Mena Maisa. So Maisa Mena Maisa says in the Chumash, V'nechshor lachem Shumas Chem. When the lady gives the Shumas Maisa to the Kohen, when he gives the Maisa Mena Maisa to the Kohen, V'nechshor lachem Shumas Chem, Kadogan min Agoyren, V'chamaleya min Hayekev. That's later on in Pasuk Chav Zayin. Pasuk Chavav says, when the Levim get the Maisa Rishon, they should take out Maisa Mena Maisa and give that to the Kohen, and that's called Trumas Maisa. Then Echshol Lachem Trumas Chem, you Levim, when you give Trumas Maisa to the Kohanim, that's exactly the same, has the same status as the Truma Gedoyla, which the farmer gives directly to the Kohen. Kadogan Menagor Mecham Lea Menayekev. So the Tanoim say, it's a Mishnah Me'ilah, that there are four of the 24 matnas kuna that have exactly the same din. Bikurim, truma gedoyla, maisa mena maisa men chala. All four are considered truma. In fact, that's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. We spoke about it last week in connection with Parsha Shlach. When you mafish chala, what bracha does the woman or the man, whoever is mafish chala, what bracha should one recite? So many have the practice that they say the bracha lahaf asher kedushanim and so on, lahafish chala min oisa al aprosha chala. And many disagree and they say no, that's a Yiddishism, that we call it chala, that's in the Loshon HaMishnayis, that's in Loshon HaTanoim. But in Loshon HaChumish, the word chala means the dough. And what you take out, what we call chala, that's referred to by the Chumash as truma. And the chala that you take out has the exact same din as truma gedoyla. That's how the Mishnah says in Maseches Meila, that bikurim and chala and truma gedoyla and maisa and amaisa are exactly the same. It's all shem echad. What's the difference? So the din is that if a person eats non-kosher food, he only gets malchus if he eats a kazayis of the food. The din is ein achila pchusim the kazayis. What happens if he's eating a ham sandwich? He has a lot of bread, he has more than a kazayis of bread, and the ham that they put in between is less than a kazayis. So does he get malchus? He did an achila. He said ein achila pchusim the kazayis. It's not called achila if he eats less than a kazayis. He ate more than a kazayis, but not all of the kazayis that he ate was the ham. The end was 3/4 of a kazayis. So that's a machlokes hatanaim where the hetem is tarif liyisa. A person ate a full kazayis of food of which part of it, or most of it, was macholos asuris, but not all of it. So we paskan ain hetem is tarif liyisa. That the kosher bread cannot be mashlem the sheer kazayis, nor does the person who ate the ham should get malchus. In order to get malchus, he has to eat a full kazayis of ham. So what happens if he eats a half a kazayis of ham and a half a kazayis of basa b'cholo? They're both treif, they're both also the kazayis, but they have nothing to do with each other. One is basa b'cholo and one is ham. One is nevela. Let's say he eats b'sar behema tahora, he eats half a kazayis of nevela b'sar behema tahora and half a kazayis of pork. They're two different isurim. One is behema tamea and one is nevela, nivlas behema tahora. So we paskin they're not mitzvah from zeim zeh. In order to get malchus, he has to eat a full kazayis of one isa. So the exception to the rule is, the Mishnah says in Meila, if a non-kohen eats truma, he gets malchus, if he eats a kazayis. So he doesn't have to eat a full kazayis of truma. If he eats a quarter of a kazayis of truma, a quarter of a kazayis of bikurim, a quarter of a kazayis of chala, a quarter of a kazayis of maisa, mena maisa, that's all shem echad, that's all considered truma. So that in that case, the coin would be loike. So that's what the pasuk says: "V'nechshav lachem trumaschem, the ma'isem and amaisa that the levim give to the kohanim is considered kadogen menagor mechamleh menayekev, is considered the exact same status as the truma gedola which the farmer gives to the kohen." So here in pasuk Gimel also it says, "Bikuri kol asher bi'artzam." When the farmers give bikurim to the kohen, also has the same status as truma gedola. Kol tor beveischa yochleinu. The kohen can eat it. The eshes kohen can eat it. It's exactly the same as the truma gedola. Then pasuk tezbov continues that Bechor Behema Tahora has to be given to the Kohanim. The Bechor Behema Tahora, if it's born without a mum, so he's supposed to be makriv it on the Mizbeach. If they makriv it on the Mizbeach, then the Torah says the Kohanim have the right to eat it. Loch kachazei atznufa kishrei kayomen. Bechor Yiyud, the Bessar Behema of the Bechor Behema Tahora belongs to the Kohanim. If the Bechor Behema Tahora has a mum, then you cannot be makriv it on, if he has a mum kavua, then you cannot be makriv it on the mizbech, then you give it to the kohanim, and they eat it the way it is, but in either event, whether it's beli mum, and it's korb on the mizbech as a korban, or it's with a mum, and you cannot be makriv it as a korban, in either event, the besar b'chor behema tahara belongs to the kohanim. Today, we try to avoid as much as possible getting involved in this asek. There are Jewish farmers, in Eretz Yisrael, in America, all over the world, there are Jewish farmers. In Europe, there used to be Jewish farmers before the Nazis killed everybody. So there were Jewish farmers, and if they have a cow that's about to give birth for the first time, it's a 50-50 chance it may be a zachar, maybe in a keva. So if the vlad that's born is a zachar, so you can't shecht it until it gets a mum by itself, and you can't make a mum. It's prohibited to be matal mum in a carbon. So it may take forever and ever, it may take years and years till it gets a mum by itself. So while you're waiting for it to develop a mum, no one's allowed to get any hanah from it. The pasuk says, "Loisave b'v'chor sherecha, v'lasogas b'chor tenecha." You're not allowed to shear up the wool, and you're not allowed to do gizma avoda is forbidden with a b'chor beim Torah, for that matter, with any karbonis. The initial pasuk, the original pasuk, says by b'chor beim Torah, "Loisave b'v'chor sherecha, v'lasogas b'chor tenecha." So it'll come out a big michshol. If a farmer, a Jewish farmer, owns a cow and it's about to give birth, so if it turns out that it's a zachar that has a kedushas carbon, and you can't be marked the carbon as man said, you can't be matal mum, you can't use it for anything. You have to wait till it gets the mum. It may take years and years. The Mishnah in Bukharis describes after the Churban Bayis Sheni that there used to be a Roman policeman whose beat was he used to walk by a certain farm. And every time he would walk by this Jewish farm, he would notice they're using all the cows, all the animals to do work except for one animal. So he said, "What is that, a holy cow? How come they never..." So he said, "Yeah, that's a holy cow." He said, "What does that mean, a holy cow? In your religion, they also have holy cows." So he says, "Yeah." He said, farmer tells him it's a b'chor behemator. So he says, "Yeah." So the goyish policeman, what are you supposed to do? So he says, "We're not allowed to..." He said, the Jewish farmer, it didn't occur to him that the goy is going to make a mum. So the Jewish farmer says, "Well, if it gets a mum by itself, we're allowed to eat it. We give it to a kohen, but we're not allowed to make a mum. So we have to wait till it gets the moment. It's already a couple of years." So the goyish policeman says, "What's the problem?" He takes out his knife and he cuts off a piece of the ear of the b'chor behemah Torah, because the farmer told him we're not allowed to do it. The farmer didn't ask him. He didn't even mean to imply that the goyish policeman should do it. So the Mishnah has a whole discussion: are the kohanim allowed to eat the b'chor behemah Torah? Are they allowed to shecht it based on that mum? If you made the mum, are you encouraged a goy to make the mum? Then the kohen is not allowed to eat it based on that mum. It has to be a mum that happened by itself. So here, the farmer shouldn't have explained so much to the policeman, but it didn't occur to him that the policeman is going to be so helpful. So today, Taisa says, today it's a mitzvah to make a shutzfus with a non-Jew. Whenever you have a Jew who owns a farm, and there are Jews all over the world who own farms, it's a mitzvah to make a shutzfus with a non-Jew to avoid the whole din of b'chor behemah Torah. In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, if you make a shutzfus with a non-Jew in order to pati yourself in the mitzvah of b'chor behemah Torah, that's not right. That's a harame, unless the farm is really owned the shutzfus by Jew and a non-Jew. If that's the only one you can get as a shutzfus, if that's the one you wanted as a shutzfus, okay. But if the only reason, the whole motivation for getting this non-Jewish shutzfus is in order to pati yourself in the mitzvah b'chor behemah Torah, so that's not allowed b'zman shebeis hamikdash or yekayim, because you're doing a harama in order to pati yourself from the mitzvah. B'zman hazeh, the purpose of the harama, the motivation to do the harama, is not so much to pati yourself in the mitzvah. Your hands are tied, you can't fulfill the mitzvah anyway of bringing the b'chor behemah Torah as a korban. Today the motivation to make a shutzfus with the non-Jew is in order to avoid having anybody violate the prohibition. So no one should be over the din of Lasav b'chor sherech or Lasav b'chor tenecha. So to do a harama with a harama, the use of a legal fiction, is in order to avoid violation of an haberet. So that's recommended. So that's why Bizman is there. We recommend making a shutzfus sakum, and Bizman shebeis hamikdash oyikam. The Gemara says it would be forbidden, and if one would do it, he would be penalized. The Gemara says that there was once a rabbi who made a shutzfus for the goy, and all of his animals died as a punishment. Why? He tried to avoid fulfilling the mitzvah of b'chor behemah Torah. So the Chumash lists off kol peterechem pasuk tezvav that b'chor behemah tahira is a matan kahuna. B'chor behemah tameya petach amar sifte b'seh. That's the end of pasuk tezvav. Kol b'chor behemah tameya sifte. It only applies to petach amar. And then tigyan aben also has to be done. B'chor Adam, you have to do a pigyan aben. So the way the pasuk, the psukim here are talking to the kohanim. Kolcher mitzvah l'choyiyah. The pasuk is talking to the kohanim. So the pasuk says the kohanim should do the pigyan aben. Ach pados if there's b'chor Adam. The kohanim do the pigyan aben. The father does pigyan aben. What do you mean the kohanim does pigyan aben? So the pshat is no. The father gives the money to the kohen. The kohen's accepting the money is the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Pidyon aben. So that's why Rav Soloveitchik pointed out there is a discussion in the classical poskim al choshen mishpat, would the father be in fulfillment of the mitzvah pigyon haben if he gives the kohen the five tzvayim bal korchoi? The kohen says, I don't like you. I don't want to take your miserable money. And the father says, I don't care whether you like me or not. Here's the money and goodbye. So is the father yet in the mitzvah pigyon haben if he gives nesina bal korchoi? So this is a discussion. The Tzeis HaChoshen quotes from the Pichadosh a whole pupil that it may be yes. Rav Soloveitchik thought it cannot be. The pasuk says in pasuk Tezvav, the pigyon haben is done by the kohanim. Ach pada siftes b'chorim. It's not done by the father. It's not that the father's nesina is the pigyon haben. The kohen's accepting the money is the pigyon haben. How can you say the kohen can be forced into it if he doesn't accept it willingly? So he didn't fulfill the mitzvah pigyon haben. How much they have to give for pigyon haben? The pasuk Tezayin mentions you have to give chamesh shkolim the shekel hakodesh. How much is exactly chamesh shkolim? We don't have any coins that correspond to that. So the Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Yudbeis Amud Aleph tells you the whole monetary system that existed bizman haTorah, bizman haTanach, and it turns out that it's 3,460 prutas. How much is that? So a pruta does not. Gemara says the Gemara thought at one point that a pruta is the smallest coin in your monetary system. Okay, so the smallest coin in the monetary system in America is a penny. In England they have halfpennies. We don't have any halfpennies, so we have a penny. So the smallest coin is a penny. So if that were true, that the smallest coin has the status of a pruta, and you have to give $34.60, so then you give $34.60 of pigyon haben. But that's not correct. The Gemara comes to the conclusion that a pruta doesn't correspond to the smallest coin in your monetary system. So what is a pruta? So Gemara keeps it a secret. Gemara never tells you what. The Gemara just says it's not the smallest coin in your monetary system. So what is it? So we leave you hanging with your tongue out. So the Rambam and the Gaonim all quote they had an oral tradition. Mishko chati sora kesev zokuk. If you have a chunk of solid, pure silver, kesev zokuk, pure silver, and you grind it up and you make silver dust and you put it on a scale. So one side of the scale you take chati sora, take a barley grain, and you cut it in half. It has to be an average sized barley grain. How do you know what's an average size barley grain? So take 5 million barley grains and you'll have the average. Okay, so you take an average size barley grain, you cut it in half, you put it on one side of the scale, then you put silver dust on the other side of the scale. So the value of so much silver, mishkal chati sa'ora, half of a barley grain, kesef zokuk, of pure silver, the value of that amount of silver is a pruta. So if you'll take, let's say, you want to find out how much is 3,460 prutos, so take half that amount. How much is half of 1,730. So take 1,730 barley grains and put them on one side of the scale, and then keep on putting pure silver on the other side of the scale, and you know how much you have to get, and the value of that amount, either give that silver or give the value of that amount of silver. So how much is that going to turn out to be? So the classical person will say that that's 96 grams of pure silver. And the minig is that you round it out and you give 100 grams of pure silver. There are some who are of the opinion that 96 grams is not accurate, that you should really give 102 grams of pure silver. But the generally accepted opinion is that you give 100 grams of pure silver. Lahachman should really be 96 grams. So for many years, silver was down. The amount of pigyon haben is going to fluctuate, going to go up. If the value of silver just went up. For many years, a pruta of silver was less than a penny. And in recent months, a pruta is a little more than a penny. It's nowhere near a penny and a half, but it's more than a penny. It's going to be, the pigyon haben is going to be more than $34.60. For many years, it was way less than $34. But that's what it says in the Chumash. You have to do pigyon haben with five shloim. And five shloim, the Gemara makes this cheshbon as 3,460 grams of pure putas, which is 96 grams of pure silver. Exactly when do you do the pigyon haben? So it says in the Chumash, simple, if duyim et ben chodesh tifter, at the end of the month. that's not so easy. Some of the months on the Hebrew calendar and the secular calendar, you have months that have 30 or 31 days. In the Jewish calendar, a month either has 29 days or 30 days. When the month has 30 days, then the next month has 2 days Rosh Chodesh. The last day of the previous month is going to have a few hours that are after the Moed Halvana, and the next day is going to have, if a month that's ending only has 29 days, so the Rosh Chodesh of the next month is only going to be 1 day Rosh Chodesh. So which month is the Chumash speaking about? Is it speaking about a 29-day month that the Pidyon HaBen is done on the Yom Lamed? Or is the Chumash speaking about a 30-day month so the Pidyon HaBen is done on the Yom Lamed Aleph? So this is the Machlokes HaTanoim in the Mishnah in towards the end of Maseches Bechoros. Next to the last Perek in Bechoros is all dedicated to the Dinim of Pidyon HaBen. So this is a dispute among the Tanaim. The accepted opinion is, clearly, the accepted opinion is Yom Lamed Aleph on the 31st day. There is an opinion that's floating around in Rishonim, Rav Lezer admits, is of the opinion that when the Tanoim, that when the opinion that was accepted was that you should do the Pidyon HaBen on Yom Lamed Aleph, it doesn't really mean Yom Lamed Aleph. It means, it seems to be against both opinions in the Tanoim. One Tanoim says the 30th day, one says the 31st day. We accept the Pidyon 31st day, so he says neither of the above. You should do the Pidyon HaBen after a full cycle has gone by, the amount of time that it takes, the average amount of time between one Moed Halvana and the other Moed Halvana. And the Moed Halvana has to do with physics. You have to know a lot of mathematics and a lot of physics to be able to calculate based on the pull of gravity when the Moed Halvana is going to be. But the Chachamim and the Gemara have an average. The average between one Moed Halvana and next Moed Halvana, whenever they announce in Shul, yesterday they announced when the Moed Halvana is going to be, that's not the accurate Moed. That time is Yerushalayim time, not the way we calculate today Yerushalayim time, but theoretical Yerushalayim time. And that's based on the assumption that the Moed Halvana is always equidistant. So that average is Chav Tes Yom, 29 days, Yud Bei Shor is 12 hours, and Tash Tzag Chalokin. How much is Tash Tzag? 793 Chalok, and the chelik is a few seconds, is 1/18 of a minute. So that's the distance, that's the amount of time between one Moed Halvana and the other Moed Halvana. So the Yireyim, one of the Rishonim, is of the opinion that when the halacha paskins that you do, that you perform Pidyon HaBen on the 31st day, doesn't really mean the 31st day, it means you have to wait this full amount of time. Sometimes it'll be the 31st day, and it still won't be after Chav Tes Yom Yud Bei Shor Tzag Chalokim. Baby was born, let's say, in the summertime, when the days are very long. Baby was born 8:15. Now 8:15 is before the Shkia. Baby's born 8:15 in the evening. Then you're going to do the Pidyon HaBen before 8:00 in the morning. So it's not yet Chav Tes Yom Yud Bei Shor. It's not 29 and a half days yet. So some are makpid for that. That even if it's on the 31st day, you should wait till after this amount of time has gone by. We know that with respect to the mitzvah of bris milah, it makes a difference whether the bris is done on the Yom HaShmini, that's called the milah bizmano, or the bris is done on a later date, that's called milah shaloi bizmano. The mitzvah bishleimusa is when the milah can be done. Sometimes you can't do it, sometimes the baby is not healthy. But the mitzvah bishleimusa is when the bris is done milah bizmano. The din that a bris milah is derech Shabbos, derech Yom Kippur, derech Yom Tov, only applies when the milah is performed milah bizmano. If it's not bizmano, then it's not derech Shabbos. Regarding Pidyon HaBen, there is a dispute in Rishonim and in Achronim whether performing the Pidyon HaBen bizmanoi on the day that it's supposed to be, on the Yom Lamed Aleph, does that constitute a mitzvah bishleimusa? And if you'll postpone, if you'll delay the Pidyon HaBen to the later date, that's considered a mitzvah shelo bishleimusa? Or no, you don't find in the Gemara such a distinction. The Gemara just discusses when is the first you can do the Pidyon HaBen. So this is a major machloka. So l'chatchila, more correct is to do the Pidyon HaBen bizmanoi. There is a very old minhag that we don't perform Pidyon HaBen balayla. You only do the Pidyon HaBen bayom. Leil should have said zvizim akdimim lemitzvah. So when it comes the night of Yom Lamed Aleph, so you should rush to perform the mitzvah. So there's a minhag that you wait till the morning of the 31st day. What's the reason for the minhag? So it's clouded and shrouded in mystery, and they give 10 different reasons. No one's sure exactly what the reason is. It seems that the main reason really is that for the Shach writes in Yerideh, the real reason really is that they always used to throw a party in conjunction with the Pinyin Adven, because Pinyin Adven doesn't even look like a mitzvah. It's just the father gives money to the kohen, gives a couple of dollar bills to the kohen, he gives cash to the kohen. So it doesn't really, you shake a lulavit, wear tefillin, you sit in sukkah, you're doing something unusual, you just give some money to the kohen, doesn't look like a mitzvah. So in order to schmaltz it up a little bit, it should look a little more bekavedig, so you throw a party in the middle, and then the kohen says, but if you are goffin, you make as much ceremony out of it as possible. Everything is all minhagim. So the Gemara says in the end of Yuma that blind people don't enjoy their food as much as people who are able to see, because when you look at it, it's based on the pasuk in Mishlei, when you can see the food, then your mouth starts to salivate, and then you'll enjoy the food better. So because the minhag always was that they would have a party in connection with the Pinyin Aben, and it's going to be at nighttime, you won't be able to see the food. Years ago, they didn't have electric light. You wouldn't be able to see the food. So that's why they developed the minhag that you always do the Pinyin Aben by Yom, so you'll be able to enjoy the party better. So that's a shalif. That's the whole reason for the minhag. So today, you turn on the lights. Everybody has weddings at night. Everybody enjoys the food at night. If you would have a takana de rabbanon, so takana de rabbanon, we would say davar shel minyan, even if the reason for the takana no longer applies, the takana is still in place. But it's not a takana, it's a minhag. With respect to minhagim, the pasuk say that the davar shel minyan does not apply. Whenever the reason for the minhag doesn't apply, so the whole minhag falls off by itself. So this is a question. So there are another 9 reasons. There are 10 different reasons why Pidyon HaBen is not done by Laila. When the Torah speaks about the Bechor Behema Tahora that has to be given to the Kohen, so it says in the Chumash, Loi Sifte, it cannot be Nifte. Bechor Behema Tahora is different from all other Karbonis. Whenever another Karbon gets a Mum Kavua, you have to be paid it, and then once you paid it, the money goes to purchase another Karbon instead of it, which will not have a Mum. And this animal is Yotel Lechulin. By the Bechor Behema Tahora, it doesn't have any Pidyon. When it gets a Mum Kavua, so it's Yotel Lechulin Belishum Pidyon. The same is true regarding one other carbon, namely Maisa Behema, because the pasuk says in the end of Chumash Vayikra in connection with Maisa Behema also Lo Sifte, it doesn't have any pidyon. Again, the parasha doesn't list off all of the 24 matans kun, it lists off many of them, and the rest appear in other psukim in Chumash. The Levim were also singled out. So the Torah says we have to support the Levim. They didn't get a share in Eretz Yisrael, so we have to support the Levim by giving the Levim the Ma'aser Rishon. So the pasuk says regarding the eating of the Ma'aser Rishon, "Achaltam osa b'chol makom." It can be eaten anywhere. What does that expression mean? "Achaltam osa b'chol makom," any place you choose to. So Rashi quotes from the Tanoim, "Afilu beveis hakvaris," even in a cemetery. The truma may not be eaten in a state of truma, whether the kohen is tameh or the truma is tameh. But Ma'aser Rishon may be eaten in a state of Tumah. Why? Because the Ma'aser Rishon doesn't have Kedusha, so it's not the same as Truma Gedola. This would have normally led one to believe that Ma'aser Rishon may be eaten by a non-Levi as well. Truma Gedola may not be eaten by a non-Kohen because it has Kedusha, so you have to have Kedusha's Truma to be permitted to eat the Truma Gedola. But to be permitted to eat Ma'aser Rishon, Ma'aser Rishon belongs to the Levian. It's Mamon HaLevim, so you have to give it to a lady, but let's say a lady invites a non-Levi to eat by him, so the Azar, a non-Levi, is not allowed to eat it. So the Gemara has a Machlokes HaTanoim. Rav Meir is of the opinion that Ma'aser Rishon is also Lazarim. A non-Levi is not permitted to eat Ma'aser Rishon. That's not the accepted opinion. We pass in La'alocha, V'chaltam osa v'chal mokam, you can eat it b'veis ha'kvorais, it can be eaten b'tumah because it doesn't have any Kedusha. So the same applies to a Zar. A non-Levi is permitted to eat Ma'aser Rishon. You're not allowed to steal it from the Levim. You have to give it to the Levim. Once you gave it to the Levim, then the Levi can invite a non-Levi to eat along with him. The Chachamim instituted that every time you have Kriyas HaTorah, there should be a Haftorah. And the Haftorah Haftorah is supposed to be Me'inyana D'yoyma. So sometimes the Inyana D'yoyma is, it's in the Plasta Poranusa, the 3 weeks preceding Tisha B'Av, or the Sheb de Nechemta, the 7 weeks in between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and Rosh Hashanah, and so on. Or the Haftorah is about the Tshuva. So sometimes the Haftorah is Minyana D'Yom, nothing to do with the Parsha, has to do with that season of the year. And usually Minyana D'Yom is considered what, something that has to do with the Parsha. So what exactly is the connection between the Haftorah, Parshas Korach, and the Kriya Fatur itself. So the simple, the superficial connection is that in the beginning of Parshas Korach, you read about the rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership. And here in the Haftarah, you read about the rebellion against the leadership of Shmuel HaNavi. The people are fed up. They don't want to have a Navi, a rabbi, leading them. They'd rather have a secular king. So Shmuel HaNavi took it as a rebellion against his leadership, which it was. It was a rebellion. They didn't want to have a religious leader. They wanted to have a secular leader. And Shmuel told him, you're not going to get away with that. I'll give you a king, but it's not going to be the way you want. It's going to be the way the Rabbanu Shlomo wants. So that's a simple connection. And the Mefarshim point out there's another connection between the Haftarah and the Parsha. That in the Parsha you see Moshe Rabbeinu calling upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make a miracle. Usually we assume that it's forbidden for a person to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make a miracle. Let's say a couple is married and they already have five sons and they're dying to have a daughter. And the wife is pregnant. So they're going to start praying now that this should be a girl. Or they have already five girls, they want to have a boy. They're going to pray, the wife is pregnant, they're going to pray that this should be a boy, this should be a girl. The Mishnah says in Brachas that that's not permissible. You're not permitted to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do a nes. Either it's a boy or it's a girl. If she's not pregnant yet, you can ask her whatever you want. But if she's already pregnant, you're asking the Rabbanu Shlomo to make a miracle. If it's the wrong sex, to change it over. So there are exceptions to the rule. It says in Shulchan Aruch that on Chanukah, when we recite Birchas HaMazon, we should include Al HaNisim. What if a person forgot to say Al HaNisim on Chanukah? So the Gemara says it's only a minhag, the mentioning of Al HaNisim and benching. Mentioning Al HaNisim and davening, that's a takana de rabbanan. Mentioning Al HaNisim and benching, the Gemara says it's not obligatory, it's only a minhag. So of course, if a person forgot to say Al HaNisim, he doesn't have to bench over again, that's clear. So the minhag is, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that whoever forgot Al HaNisim in benching, when he finishes the whole Birchas HaMazon, says, HaRachman Yasal Al HaNisim in Eflois, Yishem Shasis Al HaSeinu B'yam HaMehem B'Zman HaZeh, and we say, B'mei Matisir Ben Yechanan, and so on. So the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch ask, how can you say such a prayer? HaRachman Yasal Al HaNisim in Eflois, Yishem Shasis Al HaSeinu B'yam HaMehem B'Zman HaZeh, you should do Nisim in Eflois for us like you did in the past. But the Mishnah says in Brachas, one is not permitted to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to cause a miracle to occur. So the Shari Tshuva next to the Behetel quotes from the Tshuva's Panim Meiros three klolim. He says there are three cases where it is permissible to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do a nes. One is if you're asking him to bake a nes nistar, make a nes. Let's say when the Jewish army is at war with the Arabs and you have 100 million Arabs and you have a very tiny Jewish army, so that's a nes that the Jewish army will win. That's not a nes nigla. It's not a nes nigla. That's a nes nista. So you have a right to pray. Someone is sick from a disease. You ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make a nes, and the doctors give up hope. They don't think that there's any way B'derech HaTeva this person can survive. So we pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You should have a refuah. It should turn out that it's an ace nista, not that it should break the rules of Teva. His mom is holding by Gesisa, he's holding by dying, then you're not allowed to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should restore his life. That's an ace nigla. But if a person is sick and the doctors gave up hope, so that you're allowed to ask for an ace nista, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should heal the patient. So one rule is an ace nista you're permitted to ask. Another rule is Rachman Yasalon and Nisim and Aflos on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is Lamala Ben Ateva. He permitted even to ask for a Nes Nigla. And the third rule is an unusual tzaddik is whose shokel keneged Klal Yisrael is permitted to ask even for a personal Nes. Not only a Nes on behalf of Klal Yisrael, he's permitted to ask for a Nes on his own behalf. You have Gemaris and Tainis like that, that they were Tanoim who were unusual tzaddikim and they asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a private personal Nes. For their own purposes, it wasn't really a nes on behalf of Klal Yisrael. So this is what occurred both in the Parsha as well as in the Haftarah. In the Parsha, we see Moshe Rabbeinu praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in Bria Yivra Hashem. He asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he asked the Rabbanu Shalom, please show all of the Klal Yisrael that this fellow Korach has false tainus, false claims against me. And he asked the Rabbanu Shalom, if this is where Pihoritz is, so open it up. And if not, I plead of you, I ask you, I beg you, cause a nest to occur, create a nest, and let Imbriya Yib Hashem open up the Pihoritz over here. And the same occurred in the Haftarah, where Shmuel HaNavi is so upset why the people were rebelling against his leadership. So he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's summertime in Eretz Yisrael, Tzirchitim Hayom, Pesach time, and in Eretz Yisrael never rains in the middle of the summer. When it rains 5 minutes and it stops raining. So you don't say the same Talmud, the Mamash doesn't rain. You don't take an umbrella, you don't take a raincoat when you go visit Eretz Yisrael in the summertime. So he caused a miracle to occur to show Bnei Yisrael that they were not asking properly for a king. To show them that there was an improper request, so he calls on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make a miracle and should start pouring at that time. So this was a miracle that he asked of HaKadosh Baruch Hu just to lechvod atzmo. So that's the third rule, that an unusual tzaddik is permitted to request of HaKadosh Baruch Hu a miracle not only on behalf of Klal Yisrael, but even on his own behalf. So very often you have more than one connection between the Kriya, the Parshas HaShavua, and the Haftarah. Very often there's an obvious connection and there's a hidden connection. Okay.
Rav Schechter, thank you very much for this wonderful shiur. And as I mentioned before, thank you to all the volunteers who've helped.